Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud is brought to you by Academy for Educators, online professional development for teachers and leaders, online courses, modules, and micro-credential programs for teachers to enhance their skill sets. Now featuring the instructional coaching micro-credential, including 5 online modules framed around the work of Steve Barkley. Learn, grow, inspire. AcademyForEducators.org.
Hello, and welcome to the Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud podcast. For the last 35 years, I've had the opportunity to learn with educators at all levels, both nationally and internationally. In each of the coming episodes, I'll explore my thoughts and my learning on a variety of topics connected to teaching, learning, and leading. Thanks for listening in. Celebrating a school's success. Today, I'm privileged to have Melanie Martinez, the principal at Wharton Elementary School, and Angie Koser, the instructional coach at the school, to join us on this podcast. Wharton Elementary School in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, was recognized by the Title I program with the Distinguished High School Progress Reward for the achievement that their students made. Melanie, can you fill us in on exactly what that award pointed out about your school?
Sure. It really showed the growth of students in all areas and all subgroups. So it means that we were at the highest 5% of Title I schools in the state of Pennsylvania. We met all our annual measurable objectives. And so we were growing our special ed population, our learning support population, as well as our economically disadvantaged populations. And all students.
Well, I've had the privilege of working with you and Angie and the staff there. So it was a great pleasure for me to find out that your efforts had been recognized. When you sent me the first note, one of the first words that popped out at me is you talked about the team at Wharton receiving this award. You want to talk a little bit about how that term team fits into your leadership?
I think Steve's team fits in and is at the base of everything that we do here. One of the things is we know that it really takes every person in this building to have their focus, bring their gifts, and also work collaboratively with one another to make sure that we're meeting kids' needs. I joined the Wharton team in 2015. I had been an assistant principal at another school across the district. And when I joined the team, one of the things that I really saw was the need for us to be really looking at each other and say, how can you help me grow? How can I help you grow? And how can we work together? There was a lot of discussion of Wharton family. And we spent a lot of time in the beginning saying, how does a family treat each other? When we're working collaboratively, what can we expect from each other? And what does that collaboration require of me? How will we be growing that collaboration amongst students, and what are our next steps to make sure that that happens?
Angie, how does the concept of team impact your work as an instructional coach?
It's actually impacted it in a positive way. So Melanie has really opened up that conversation and put in a lot of safety nets that teachers are now feeling safer to talk about things with their colleagues and ask questions. So there is a heightened level of vulnerability that teachers are showing one-on-one coaching with me, but also in team meetings. So we're able to have some of those conversations about what's working, what's not working, and teachers are putting themselves out there and allowing the collaborative team to help brainstorm and push their practice. So it's really helped the coaching me individually, but also peers coaching peers and the school kind of working together.
So it's establishing a coaching culture in the school.
Yes.
And, you know, Steve, if I can say, one of the things that Angie said made me think it really was really stepping back. And if you're talking about collaboration really speaks to the fact that there's a level of trust and respect that is there. So whether it's peer-to-peer as adults or peer-to-peer as kids. So we really spent a lot of time to say, you know, how is it that we're going to continue to grow that? And a lot of it was in unspoken words, but also the types of activities and focus that we did together. We really have spent time getting to know each other. We, at the same time that I joined the team, there was also a number of new teachers that joined the building. So it really was a great time to kind of renorm and reform that group and take that time to get to know each other. And so one of the things that when I joined the group and said, you know, the new principal's looking for risk takers and cliff divers, but don't worry, I have parachutes. And so it was kind of letting them know that that's what I'm looking for, but really backing up my words with the fact that they could trust me enough to take those risks. And the amazing thing is we're also seeing that now in classrooms. You know, yesterday we had a teacher who sent out some examples of work that students had done where they're writing raps and songs about figurative language and performing poems. Really talk about being vulnerable, being a fifth grade boy with a guitar and singing about figurative language in front of your peers. A teacher must have really spent some time to create a safe and supportive environment for that type of creativity to be able to come out.
Well, I've been following you on Twitter. So I get updated a little bit on some of the things you're implementing, and I know that you've worked with a Genius program, the Genius Hour renamed. So you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. One of the other things that I saw that when I came in my one-on-one conversations with teachers was that the schedule was the root of all evil and friction in the building. A lot of the implementation instructionally or program-wise was really inhibited by the way that the daily schedule was set up. So one of the things that we did was in getting a lot of forming that ownership and making sure I'm hearing all voices, even though they tell you that first year as a principal, you shouldn't make any major changes, we flipped the schedule in the middle of the year and came back after New Year to a brand new schedule, one that incorporated 40 minutes at the end of every day as an enrichment piece. We had had already kids receiving enrichment in the arts, whether it was through music lessons, participation in band and orchestra, or art enrichment. So we said, you know, if enrichment's good for some, it's great for all. So how do we really make sure we carve out that time? So Genius Hour really was brought about in some ways through Google, who they used to call it 20% time, where they would allow their employees to really pursue research and projects that they were interested in, that they had a personal passion about. So we were also incorporating that same concept for our students. So we couldn't call it Genius Hour because it's only 40 minutes. So we couldn't have our kids thinking that 40 minutes was an hour because there goes our state math scores. So we called it Genius 4.0. And a lot of the kids just call it 4.0 time around here. So during that time, kids are having the opportunity to research and present topics that are of interest to them. Angie, do you want to talk a little bit more about that and how teachers structured that time?
Yeah. So again, with like building the culture of that Melanie had set up, building the culture of the school, that did kind of trickle down into classes where teachers were now setting learning goals and doing mini lessons around social and emotional things that they saw their students needed, such as how to work in a group, how to share supplies, how to disagree with somebody respectfully, because they were really having issues doing some of this inquiry-based learning or creating some of these projects without having some of those skills. So the learning goal and the feedback the teachers gave sometimes for students were about those things, were about, were you working as a team? Were you contributing? Were you holding others accountable? So that was really interesting to see the flip in that time. And that skill then for teachers did end up basically trickling through their day. So teachers spent less time dealing with student behaviors and pair issues and teamwork issues and more time actually teaching the content. So it was a great time where We were able to give students power within the classroom to make choices, and the focus be on their social and emotional learning, not as much the content, but also time for them to be able to work as a team.
Steve, you had done some work with us at the district level to say, what are those student learning behaviors that you want kids to be able to have? So one of the things that we did was we worked at each grade level and came up with, what was that list? What was that list? What does that look like in K-5? What does that look in first, all the way up through fifth? And as we started to look at really the progression and how we would see that those increasing throughout the grade levels, you also had us do work and say, okay, so if that's the student learning behavior, how will you set up experiences for students that will bring about the opportunity for them to build that behavior? So that also was a huge part of what we looked at for during that initial, that Genius 4.0 time. And so teachers were designing STEM projects. They were designing opportunities for research, as we talked about, but also those specific opportunities built around building collaboration skills. When I tried a lot, because we said, we don't know what it's going to look like because we haven't done it yet. And, you know, teachers all want to know, what does it look like? What should my lesson plan look like? You know, what are the nuts and bolts? And I kind of gave them the permission to make that secondary, and the experience and the structure for kids around building the collaboration primary. So if it was standards based, it was inquiry based, and it built collaboration, the answer from me was yes. So front loading that permission. And I said, and by the way, it might fall apart. And by the way, I might be in the room, and it's all going to be fine, because kids are going to learn from those errors and your errors as much as the success.
So if other schools were to visit your school and observe your students, what do you think they'd see in looking at your students that they'd want to see more of, perhaps back in their buildings when they left?
That's a really good question. And now we've seen that evolve even since we started this culture building. And I think they would see students doing a lot of cooperative learning, which is something that Melanie has given the teachers professional development on. So students are doing a lot of cooperative learning without issues, in a sense. We used to have a lot of issues with, you know, I don't want to work with that person, or I don't want to do this. And we're not really seeing that anymore. So students are getting along. Students are holding each other accountable. Students are disagreeing and using evidence to explain why they disagree. And nobody's getting upset. People are accepting that as their opinion. And they're still able to work together and create something that shows that they're applying the standard and they've mastered the skills the teachers want to see.
What are some other changes that have occurred that you'd want to point out for people that you think are parts of what is leading to your success?
I think I've seen teachers' willingness to be leaders really evolve. So the other thing I felt when I came was, you know, in some classes, it's not cool to be the smart kid. It wasn't necessarily cool to be the smart teacher, you know, who had a lot to share, and that being that one who was called to present or asked to be the expert or the subject matter expert on, in a certain piece, wasn't necessarily something that teachers felt comfortable with, again, because that trust and that collaboration and that fear of failure was there. And so I've definitely seen an increase of that. I've had to be really purposeful to know when to move out of the way. So, for example, there's amazing work that happens here. Every teacher and every professional is part of a committee. So we have a school improvement committee, a climate committee, and a community engagement committee. They plan most of the school day and evening events and other initiatives, PBIS initiatives. And so one of the things, as much as I love to collaborate with them, I really had to come to understand that when I'm in the room, I change the conversation, whether I mean to or not. But as the leader, they may not step up as much with me in the room. So I've had to uninvite myself from things that I really like to be a part of, because I really want that. I want that leadership and that piece to have a chance to emerge. And I'm just blown away by the work they do, the problem solving that happens. And it really builds that collaboration vertically, because every committee has a vertical population, K to five. So I definitely have seen teachers taking risks with each other, really pushing the pocket. We have done some things also in bringing along our parents into this new direction that we've been going. You were a big part of that, Steve, in the beginning, as we were incorporating 4.0 as part of the day, in explaining that, you know, this isn't just great chance for them to cooperate, but these skills that they're learning about communication, learning how to learn critical thinking, are going to be necessary for them to be successful. We're growing kids in jobs that we don't know what they look like yet, but they need to know how to get along with someone, how to communicate, and how to be a critical thinker. So I think that was a big part. They've been part of the home learning. So we've also picked that up, Steve. We love that idea that you had shared. And Angie, can you talk a little bit about how that's morphed also with the engagement and choice?
Yeah, as most things that are suggested, you always have some early adopters. So we had a few teachers who were all about the home learning, and they created these choice boards. So they're just basically kind of like a bingo board that gets sent home, but it allows a lot of flexibility with the parents. So there's so many activities, and let's say they have to get five of the 10 activities done by Friday, but that gives them choice. If they have soccer on Tuesday and Wednesday, they can do these activities Monday, Thursday, Friday. And we've seen a lot of parent buy-in and parent appreciation that we are allowing the flexibility, and we are respecting that there are important things that they want to do at home. So the teachers have also brought in some of those social and emotional learning in the homework. So some of the homework assignments are call your grandma and talk to your grandma, or we have a dual language program, you know, call your aunt and talk to her in Spanish. So they've appreciated that some of the homework is also building the family structure and engaging the parents into some of the academics. And then what we've seen happen is, since parents are responding positively to it, other teachers are looking at those early adopters and going, oh, let me see that. Can I see that? And because we do have this culture, this coaching culture building in the school, they are going to their other vertical teammates and asking to borrow those resources and feeling positive about it and taking ownership of it. So it's been great.
A word that's being promoted quite a bit these days is equity. And I'm wondering how you would describe the things that you've done bringing equity to your students.
I would say that the opportunities for kids to collaborate and find interests that they have passion about, we actually have seen an increase. So I had a teacher last year to say, you know, I have a fifth grader this year who the other teachers in the past had said, you know, he's not great at doing his homework. He's not real engaged. He developed a project on the black hole done completely at home, research that he presented then to his classroom, to his classmates, that this teacher said, you know, I've never seen this kid so engaged. So when we see kids that are usually, that really sometimes could be disenfranchised from the learning process, find that motivation, and it really connects with them. When we think about our ELL population and our learning support population, having kids have the opportunity to focus on some of those social emotional skills, that verbal rehearsal, they really feel that they can contribute to that learning process. I feel that it's really also kind of leveled the playing field for some of our kids. We do provide an after-school program, extended learning program, that really also focuses on, you know, we have three pillars that we really build everything around. inquiry-based learning, standards-based, that's also differentiated and personalized. And so that really hit into our after-school program also. So we're able to provide, again, really hands-on learning that really pushes kids' thinking. We have a STEM-based program, which really, we have different guest speakers that come, field trips and opportunities that also provide some of that extra support after school for kids who might not always get it.
So if I get this straight, you focused on enriching the environment for students, and it led to increases in the reading and math scores as measured by state standardized tests.
It is fantastic. Yes. So, you know, sometimes you do all the right things and you're driven by what's the best fit for kids and looking at saying, you know, what makes sense in growing kids. And then it actually shows up on paper, you know, so that's all very exciting for us because you feel like you're doing the right thing. One of the things that I think that we're real focused on, my whole staff, is that, you know, kindergarten through fifth grade, we're an awfully important part of a kid's childhood. So when we look at trying to look that in a 360, what does that mean? And how do they see themselves as a learner? We're building the confidence. Of course, we're building all those academic skills that are going to help them be important, you know, be important contributors in life. But we're also just helping them build their confidence and helping them find out who they are. So, you know, it's fantastic. When you say enriching the environment, one of the things that was most important to me as a building leader is what my building feels like. How do people feel coming to work? How do the big people feel coming to work? How do the little people feel coming to school? And how do parents feel dropping their students off every day? And so we had a big focus on making sure that really what is warm and welcoming, inviting. And I think that it's really paying off. I get fantastic feedback from substitutes, from parents, and from my staff. You know, where I was excited and extremely proud of the work of the team as we saw the results in our academic scores, I was equally or even more proud and excited to see the results of some of the climate surveys for staff and also for families about how they feel here at school. Because if you feel valued and you feel like your work's important, you're going to work harder, you know? And I really see that showing up.
That's true for both teachers and kids, huh?
I believe so. Mm-hmm.
Angie, I frequently talk about the partnership of an instructional coach with the principal. How would you describe the partnership that you and Melanie have formed for the work you're doing there?
Melanie says that we're like a tribe. I'm her people. So it's crucial where we touch obviously on a daily basis, if not multiple times a day, to make sure we're on the same page. But we really just think about what is best for the teachers, what is best for the kids, and what do the teachers need to know to go to the next step. So we're just having ongoing conversation as far as professional development. How can we build teacher leaders? How can we empower teachers? And what we've seen is when we do that, it trickles down to the students. The students feel empowered. They take ownership of their learning. They're like Melanie said, they're basically building their identity when they're here with us. So we want to make sure we're supporting them. So it's kind of crucial that we be on the same page, because even if we're not together, we're sending the same message, which makes teachers feel like, okay, I'm secure in what I'm doing and I'm hearing the same message from 2, 3, 4 people and I'm doing the right thing. So I think it's key.
And sure, I can always trust, I'm sorry. And I can
no,
trust her to push me. She can always push me, you know? So it's, I count on her to be nudging me as much as she nudges teachers. And so it has been crucial. You know, there's not many decisions I make in this building without talking to Angie first. because I need to have somebody else's, you know, I don't have an assistant principal, so I am the loan administrator. So having that other person to say, Angie, tell me what you really think. Mm-hmm. And so, I think that our relationship has really grown. I mean, we're just into our third year. And so that same page comes very easily because I think we think the same about what's best for kids.
Yeah.
Steve, when you were here and we were starting, and I was just starting out here, and we were starting with our whole 4.0 initiative, and we were doing things that I had not seen before. And I said to you, what are we going to do? Steve, what am I going to do for professional development? You know, what do I need to grow? How will I grow them to continue to do this? And your answer to me was, you need to do with your staff what you're asking your staff to do and grow and provide the environment in their classrooms. And so Angie said, yeah, because that means ed camps and really thinking out of the box and teacher leadership. We really don't do a lot of stand and deliver for professional development. It's rare that we're all together any place other than our short mm-hmm. staff meeting. But really, it is teacher based and teacher driven. And it's very fluid. We usually end up with three different plans. Mm-hmm. I would say it's great we work in a Google Doc because we're constantly changing it based on what do they need now.
Well, ladies, thank you so much. I'm again just delighted that you were recognized for what you've caused to have happen there. Please do extend my congratulations again back to your entire staff. If it's okay with you, I'd like to stick your email addresses into the posting on the podcast so that people who would like to find out more and maybe even set up a visit to your school can contact you.
That would be great, Steve. We're certainly just still, I feel like we're just at the beginning of this journey. So we certainly would be more than happy to share and get ideas from other folks as well who are maybe doing the same type of work at their school.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, folks. I'd love to hear what you're pondering. You can find me on Twitter at Steve Barkley or send me your questions and find my videos and blogs at barkleypd.com.